So what I'm going to do is to review some recent and not so recent progress related to understanding in more precise terms what this duality between n equals 4 sub Young Mills and string theory really means in kind of more quantitative way. So in particular, how to see more sort of explicitly how string theory actually appears on the gauge theory side, and also in a way to provide more quantitative checks of duality. So this work is basically is done on our paper, is related to what we're doing with Sergei Frolov during the last year and a half. And there is a recent paper with Krushensky and Ryzhov, and maybe at the end I'll mention also more recent work with Stefanski, which appeared actually, which just appeared. So let me say just a few words about one particular motivation of all these stories, to understand in what sense n equals 4 superconformal super Young Mills theory may be solvable or integrable, etc. So it's a very special theory which we know for many years already, and it's an example of four-dimensional conformal field theory. And by analogy with two-dimensional conformal field theories, we may think that maybe we may be able to solve it, in a sense, compute exactly anomalous dimensions of conformal operators as functions of parameters. Parameters here are gauge coupling and n for SUN theory. So that problem simplifies in large n limit when we have functions of Toft coupling. But still, what that means to have integrability in four dimensions is not clear. Fortunately enough, we now have a better idea how and why that may happen, because essentially there is a hidden two-dimensional structure in large n super Young Mills theory, and the key sort of object which plays an important role in the story, how we can extract two-dimensional theory out of four-dimensional conformal field theory, is to concentrate on dilatation operator and look at anomalous dimensions of conformal operators, and they will be described by some effective sigma model. So that certainly goes just a short way towards solving conformal field theory. We just know anomalous dimensions, even if that succeeds. But how to compute correlation functions is much, much harder problem. So just to motivate, to give some notation, what we'll be discussing is n equals 4 super Young Mills theory at large n with fixed Toft coupling. That's the theory, and the basic, the combination of scalars, of six scalars, or six adjoint scalars, which will play an important role in what follows, these ones. And we'll be looking at operators, later on I'll be looking at operators which depend on these chiral scalars. So that's the symmetry of the theory, at least an obvious symmetry of the theory is just conformal group times SO6. And we may be looking at various local operators which are built out of fields. So what is the function, what are their dimensions, how we sort of identify the basis of proper conformal operators, and how we compute dimensions as a function of lambda. So this is easy question for BPS, for protected operators, their dimensions do not depend on lambda. And that's basically the end of the story. We can classify them just on the basis of symmetry. Now for near BPS operators, again, there is a recent work which was Bernstein, Maldacena, Astazi, sort of suggested how we can go and find anomalous dimensions of such operators. But the real interest is non-BPS case. And here, if I go back to what was actually known on gauge theory side, it was known already that in QCD context, at one loop level, in the planar limit, there is certain relation between anomalous dimensions of composite operators, minimal twist operators, and spin chains, in particular non-compact SL2 spin chain. There was some work done in early 90s of making this relation precise. Now, in the context of n equals 4 theory, there was a recent work by colleague of Lipatov and others, where looking at such operators, for example, you can explicitly compute first few orders in the anomalous dimension of such operator at large S, or even a finite S. You can identify what's the function of lambda which appears here. First few orders in this function lambda we can compute in perturbation theory. At the same time, I'll go back to that question later on from the string theory side. From the string theory side, we know the strong coupling expansion of that same function. So one can also look at various other operators, like with several scales, with many covariant derivatives. And in the context of n equals 4 theory, they turn out to be related to certain integrable superspin chain. So that's just perturbative Young-Mills theory. So in particular, important observation was done by Minahan and Zaremba that looking at purely scalar operators, one loop dilatation operator, anomalous dimension operator, is described by integrable spin chain, where at each side of the chain we have six possible sort of projections of effective spin, where with each of these real scalar being a component. So this is just a story on the perturbative Young-Mills side. One can generalize all these different types of operators into some most general operator and think of what kind of superspin chain appears there. But the real question is what we learn from these one loop observations, and whether we can go to all loops, what kind of spin chain can appear, and what is any, if any, relation to string theory. So that's the questions we would like to address. And maybe before I go to string theory, let me very quickly sort of remind you how these spin chains appear in the case of simplest operators, which are just built of two chiral scalars. So we have two complex combination of scalars in some powers, and they may be ordered in various ways. So there are, say, J1 plus J2 scalars. So that's the length of that will be the length of the spin chain. There is a periodicity condition because of the trace. And then we can just compute anomalous dimension operator of acting on such operators. So this is straightforward computation. Important point that in large N limit, the resulting operator can be identified with the spin chain, which is nothing but Heisenberg spin chain in this case, which is ferromagnetic spin chain. There is plus sign here. This is Toft coupling. This is one loop correction. And if that were not for planar limit, we'll have non-local corrections. Non-local means sort of not single sum, but double sum. So going to higher loops, what one finds is, say, this is just unit operator, one loop correction, two loop correction, three loop correction, etc. Loops mean just powers of this lambda. So two loop term happens to be, again, nearest neighbor plus next to nearest neighbor interaction, and that was the result of Beisert, Christiansen, and Staudacher. And there is a guess, well, which is very much confirmed by now, what's this structure of this D3, which is three loop. So the three loop term, and I'll return back to its structure, it contains next to next to next ordering interactions between spins plus quartic spinning terms. So in principle, that's just a data which follows from perturbative Young-Mills theory. So we would like to see what kind of lessons we can learn from that data.
You're going very fast, but
yeah.
Isn't it sort of obvious that in N loop you could always write D in this fashion? Something like N interactions, some
coefficients. The structure at N loops seem to be single sum over sites, then you will have I'll have a transparency with more precise formula, but there will be terms which essentially like spin-spin interactions, then quartic spin interaction, then cubic, and so on. But such terms do not appear at one and two loops.
And I was just asking, is there sort of a minimal maximal complexity that obviously encompasses everything? Other, if you do an end loop calculation, you could write down an equivalent spin chain with some thing up to some number of spins that would do it. And then the question is just how complex that has to be.
Yes.
Or is it conceivable that there is no answer at all?
There is a well-defined algorithm to which tells us what are the coefficients, say, in spin-spin terms. What is not completely clear how to reconstruct multi-spin interactions. In fact, there is an answer to that to the three-loop order. In this term, there is an answer how you get essentially these terms from just these terms. It might be that this is true also. It may be that this is true also to higher loops, and that's a conjecture. I'll get back to that at the end. If
it
I hope.
Maybe that you only need Forsman interactions.
No, it's probably what you need to know. Well, in an ideal world, you only need to know spin-spin interactions, and that determines the rest. But that's just a conjecture. It may be so, and that is so at three-loop order. At four-loop order, there is a guess, but it doesn't fit into integrable chain, which is known, which may
but
not be.
In any order, you could always find something which might be arbitrary, get more and more complicated, but it would work.
Hopefully, the structure.
It's impossible that you, is it not the case that you could always find something, whether it's arbitrarily complicated or not? Rather than 10th loop order might involve 10 spin interactions. Or could it be possible that, it seems to me kind of obvious, you should always be able to find some spin chain reproduce.
Well, there is the hope that there is an integrable spin chain behind that, and that constrains it a lot. I don't have an answer. I would like to stress that what we are looking at is very, very special sector of operators, which is closed under randomization. For example, if I add the third complex combination of scalars, I'll need to include fermions as well. So there will be a super spin chain which will be associated with that, and that was discussed by Beiser. So anyway, the best hope is to understand this sector first and to see what we can say about this relation operator. And help comes from string side. So the game is try to utilize both sides as much as possible and make guesses on both sides and see how far we can go. So what do we know about string theory? So this is ADS5 S5s. String theory, and essentially, that's a sketch for S5, that's a sketch for ADS5 in global coordinates. So we'll be looking at strings which move in S5 mostly. So the SIG model has the structure which is sort of easy to write down. This is bosonic part, this is fermionic part. Fermions make the whole thing conformal theory. And we expect, well, this bosonic part is an integrable classical theory. As was argued by people here, once we add fermions, it's still classically integrable, and the hope is that it's quantum mechanically integrable as well. We'd like to compute spectrum of states. So what that means, computing energies as functions of obvious global charges, some hidden charges or oscillator numbers, and tension. So the string tension here is related to Toft coupling, so that's our basic assumption. So what are these charges? So there are five obvious charges, which are the Cartan charges of SO2,4 and SO6. So essentially there are two spins in ADS5 and three spins in S5, or Cartan generators of this algebra. So the string can move in three orthogonal planes in S5, but it also can have two spins in ADS5. So the energies may depend on these charges, plus they may depend on hidden charges or they may have some other quantum oscillator numbers. So the real question, how these energies depend on string tension? Because that's understanding that these dependencies, we can identify what kind of operators on Young-Mills side may correspond to these string states. But then we'll need to know how they depend on soft coupling. So the basic assumption of duality or statement of duality is that string states are the same as super Young-Mills states. So we can compare Varek's operators to super Young-Mills operators of state, or that implies also that energies are related to dimensions. So how good we can check this? We can look at particular states, compare left and right sides, but we're really dealing with two different expansions. So the usual answer whether we can check this relation was that we don't really we cannot do that because we don't really know how to compare two different expansions. Unless we're dealing with BPS states where symmetry is our basic tool to make this comparison work. Already near BPS case is non-trivial. There are various near BPS means BMN case. And obviously, it would be interesting to see what happens in non-BPS case. And that's what we would like to do. So the recent progress with essentially BMN and Gubster, Klebanov, and Polyakov is to look at, the idea is to look at states with large quantum numbers. So suppose there is a large quantum number like spin in S5. There is a new limit which we may consider. Instead of just taking lambda to zero or lambda being large, we can consider large quantum number, look at semi-classical string states, and fix this what I'll call lambda tilde, usually called lambda prime, a ratio of lambda and j squared. So generic string states are expected to have energy scaling like fourth power of lambda, but for large quantum numbers, it's natural to expect that the semi-classical states will have the energy scaling at square root of lambda. So roughly because what we'll have is energy scaling as j, at least this is engineering, well, canonical dimension, but j for semi-classical states, any quantum number, scales as string tension. So square root of lambda is string tension, so that's the natural scaling for dimension. So what we'll be finding is that dimension will be going for such semi-classical states as this quantum number, which is large, plus some function of, which may involve this quantum number and string tension, square of string tension. So concentrating on such states make this duality map already rather more explicit. And two obvious examples is, one is this BMN example, where we look at nearly point-like strings which orbit a big circle of S5. So for them, we can, the ground state of just point-like string is, has energy being equal to spin, but nearby excitations, their spectrum can be computed, and up to 1 over j terms, which we drop in this limit where we fix lambda tilde and send j to infinity. And send j to infinity, that's the spectrum, familiar spectrum, and that's exact result in lambda tilde. Expanded at small lambda tilde, it will be powers of lambda tilde. Expanded, taking lambda tilde large, you'll just get square root of lambda tilde. Now, the operators which we're dealing with here will be one complex combination of scalar being very large, plus small number of other complex combination of scalars, or maybe derivatives. So small number of impurities, small deviation from the BPS state. So another example where the duality relation becomes more explicit when we look at semi-classical states, and that's actually the generic story also for string states, is where we will have energy depending on this quantum number and lambda, but the two dependencies will be sort of decoupled. So if we consider string rotating in AdS5, and that's a basic example, with single spin in ADS5. Then what we'll see that J dependence becomes logarithmic at large J. So the energy scale is J plus some function of coupling times logarithm of J. And that log J dependence appears happens to be the same on both sides of duality. So that's already non-trivial, and this function f of lambda should be interpolating between strong and weak coupling regimes. So the operators which we are dealing with here are sort of minimal twist operators, where we have, say, one scalar, complex conjugated scalar, many covariant derivatives, and another scalar. So what we know about this function on string side, it starts with square root of lambda, that's just classical energy of this string. Plus there will be one loop quantum correction, two loop quantum correction, which is just alpha prime correction on string side. So these are not, these are present, and in fact the whole function is built out of this correction on string side. But on gauge theory side, that's a familiar story from similar operators we discussed by Groth and Wilczek, and very recently I'll review the recent work in the context of Enius 4 theory. One can actually compute these terms now. Even recent paper gave three loop correction in this function. So the same J dependence, but whether you can argue that that's the same function which you have here is a tough question. So an interesting observation is that looks like indeed the two expansions seem to match. Yeah, let me just first review what is known, since I'm there was a recent paper on that which seems to give more credence to that interpolation. So again, what is known on string side is this coefficient and this coefficient.
Yeah.
So this is a tree level, one loop, string correction. So what is known on Young-Mills side is this coefficient and two others. So how they look like, and that's the most recent paper on that is by Kotick of Lipatov, Velizhanin, and Anishchenko. So what they did, they start, you start with this operator, say, so these are traceless symmetric covariant derivatives, or just some d plus in power s. This operator actually mixes with five others in context of n equals four Young-Mills, and you need to diagonalize the whole system. And this is just done at higher orders. This is a very, very complicated problem done with the help of computers. And recent three-loop progress was actually based on the previous work by people who are into purely non-supersymmetric gauge theory computations of anomalous dimension at three loops. So some recent progress in this area which allowed these people to compute three-loop corrections to anomalous dimension matrix of such operators for any S, for any number of covariant derivatives. So taking S large, that's the formula which they get, and just what I was discussing with notation J being S here. So A1, A2 were known. So this is Gross-Wilczek, this is Kotick of Lipatov, Velizhanin a couple of years ago, and this is a very recent paper. So that's using particular dimensional realization by the reduction scheme, etc. But the important point is that these coefficients seem to match into simple interpolating formula, something like that, with 10% agreement. So these numbers match with these three numbers, if you just interpolate. Lipatov, KLV, 2 years ago, well, a year and a half ago, suggested that you can interpolate between these two coefficients and these two coefficients on string side. Now they compute three-loop term, and that confirms sort of that interpolation. Naively, put it in a naive way, what they suggest interpolate like this. So the function looks like this. In fact, if I get back to that, looks like...
If you take that function...
Yes. Expand a small lambda, you...
With a large lambda by construction.
Yes. But you need to match few coefficients here and few coefficients here. They don't really write that this in that way. What they say is that they suggest a simple relation between how this function may be related to that function, and that should be the same function. Well, I'm not, it's not really, I just mentioned this because it's a recent.
It's not that
what?
It's
not that. No, it's not a claim that this is exact formula, it's just a match. Exact formula may be some more complicated function. In fact, later on I'll show you, it may be some hypergeometric function, but it essentially looks like square root, very close to that. But at least the good news is that we should assume, we should expect this is a smooth function which has smooth expansion in both limits, and that seems to be the case. But obviously it would be much nicer to go better than that and to have quantitative statement that that function is actually the same function which we see on both sides. And that's what we are trying to do now. And this more recent work after, so the next step after BMN was to look at states with several large spins. Instead of just having one single large spin where we see there's a quantitative, qualitative agreement between the formulas which we get on gauge theory side and string side, what happens if we look at several large spins? It looks like we can make precise matching between particular terms in the two, on the two sides. So how that works and why? So suppose we have two semi-classical string states with two components of angular momentum, so J1 and J2, and total spin goes to infinity while we fix again this lambda tilde. So the first observation is that the classical energy of such strings happen to have regular expansion in this lambda tilde. So this is by no means obvious because, for example, for single spin in ADS, the energy scales as, it contains square root of lambda there. So the coefficients of this log J term has, the first term is log lambda. So that's not what happens if you have two components of angular momentum. So expansion is actually regular in lambda or lambda tilde at large J. So that's how energy depends on J. And you may wonder, one may wonder whether we can somehow relate these terms to Young-Mills theory. So this C1, C2 are just ratios of spin, functions of ratios of spins. And they, in general, are quite non-trivial, depending on what particular solution we're discussing. So secondly, so that's just classical energy. But what about alpha prime corrections? They could spoil this structure. Now, the conjecture, which was checked for particular example of this rotating string with two spins, is that alpha prime correction is actually suppressed at large J limit. So there are alpha prime corrections to that formula. Obviously, there should be. But if you take J to infinity with fixed lambda tilde, these terms are suppressed. So what that means, if true, that means this expression is actually exact in the limit, in that limit. It's exact string prediction, and that's why you should be able to see it on gauge theory side. So that's the same, roughly speaking, the same story as in BMN case, where instead of thinking of energy of particular classical state, you look at energies of small excitations near point-like string. So there, again, in that same limit, the usual wisdom is that if you take J to infinity, there are no corrections beyond plane wave limit. So there are subleading terms, but they're suppressed by 1 over J. So here that seems to happen just for classical energy. So that was just our conjecture, but remarkably it was confirmed by computations on Young-Mills side. So as I'll review, doing these coefficients, which happen to be for particular particular solution, just some non-trivial elliptic functions of ratios of spins, are reproduced on Young-Mills side from one-loop Young-Mills perturbation theory and two-loop Young-Mills perturbation theory.
And that comes from just a classical string? I mean, you don't want that.
Yeah, it's just classical string.
In ABS.
Yes, classical string, just bosonic part of it. But the fact that there are no alpha prime corrections depend on that this is supersymmetric string theory. So fermions are behind the scenes to say, well, they ensure that this is exact string result in that limit. So the simplest example.
That's proved.
What is proved, that's a, well, that this is exact string result in general is a conjecture. It was checked that alpha prime corrections are suppressed for particular solution with two J1, J2s. And we believe that's exact, that's the general fact.
But how do you prove that?
just computing one loop correction to that particular string.
Oh, so the first.
Yeah, you can do, this is classical solution, compute alpha prime correction to that energy.
Yeah.
You get some expression, take j to infinity for fixed lambda tilde, you discover that this coefficient does get correction, but it is 1 plus 1 over j. So if j goes to infinity. Yes, the conjecture is that that's true for two orders. And implicit confirmation of that conjecture is that these results are reproduced on Young-Mills side. Yes, so that's a separate, I'm not trying to, it's a kind of bootstrap argument. But what is known on string side, there is no one loop correction of that formula in that limit. Yeah, yes, yes. notice that this is exact in lambda, so that effectively is one loop, two loop, three loop, whatever, in Young-Mills. On string side, it's a different perturbation theory. It's an expansion alpha prime, which translates here in 1 over j expansion. So simplest example where we have such a behavior of classical energy is
the calculation in the Young-Mills side is C's cannot be hypergeometric functions.
I'll discuss this, yes, elliptic functions.
Even in one loop.
Even in one loop. So the I'll get to that. But the operators which you are dealing with are very long operators. So J1 plus J2 is large. So that's why it's highly non-trivial. So simplest example of such behavior of a classical string solution is the one where we have circular string sitting in S5 and rotating with two equal spins. So string is actually living on S3 within S5 and rotating with two spins. So what kind of solution we get? So to motivate what we should get, let's look at flat space first. So consider 4 plus 1 dimensional Minkowski space. And it's easy to construct rotating string solution just by taking two complex combinations of coordinates, writing something like equal time dependence in two planes, and cosine n sigma, sine n sigma. N is just winding number, how many times it winds, circle string goes around. So the energy is usual Regi trajectory, Regi behavior. E depends on spin this way. T is tension. Now you observe that this x1 plus x2 is 1. So what that means, the string is actually lying on S3 within R4. So there is a similar analogous solution in ADS5, S5, where we just take time from ADS5 and we consider S3 in S5. So instead of, here we have this constraint, X1 squared plus X2 squared equal 1. So we already have S3 here. And the ansatz for the solution is just cosine psi, sine psi, and equal faces here. So just faces are just omega tau with equal omegas. Psi is just sigma. The difference compared to flat space is that the coefficient, well, in flat space we know that this coefficient should be equal to that coefficient. Should it be sigma plus tau, sigma plus minus tau? In ADS5, S5 case, they are not equal, but so omega is related to that n through a simple formula, through the energy of, through constraint, it's related to how time is proportional to tau. And the formula which we get, compare this to this, or this, is obviously the same dimension, but different formula. So it's j squared plus, in this case, lambda, is our tension squared. So that formula has, obviously, a regular expansion large j. So if I set j to infinity, it has regular expansion lambda tilde. So that's an example of that same behavior which I was suggesting may be useful to look at. So in this case, C1, C2 are just constants. But in, well, these are called A1, A2. But in general, they'll be functions of ratios of spin. If we have several spin components, here I had them equal. So for more general solutions are just rigid. The shape of a string may be rigid, like let's consider fold a string with center of mass running along S5. So center of mass is doing what it does in BMN case, And in BMN case, you consider small fluctuations near that. But here you consider large folded string, which also rotates in another plane. So there are two angular moment components. So here, this angle psi is stretched in sigma. And two other angles just describe this rotation along S5 and within another plane. Psi is just described by Sine-Gordon equation, one-dimensional Sine-Gordon equation. So it's mathematically equivalent to a problem of pendulum in gravitational field. So psi is this, psi as function of sigma is what this coordinate does in the case of pendulum. So you can have folded string where psi goes back and forth, or you can have circle string where it's psi just is proportional, is periodic in sigma, like this. So these two cases do give you that same expansion for the energy as a function of ratio of spins. So what kind of function? It's actually quite complicated function. So to find how, just solving this Sine-Gordon problem, one-dimensional Sine-Gordon problem, you learn that that energy as a function of spins is given by solution of this system. So what is the system? You take K and EER elliptic integrals as function of Z. Z is just some auxiliary variable. So you need to solve this system for energy as function of J1 and J2 by eliminating the Z from that system of equations. So lambda is our string tension squared, and is through this relation. So you can just, we can work out explicitly how this, what kind of expansion we get, what kind of C1, C2 we get. And C1, for example, is again expressed in terms of the elliptic integrals, where Z0 is just given by solution of that equation. So remarkably, that same expression, so I reproduce in Young-Mills site. So starting with this, starting with dilatation operator, which is Heisenberg spin chain, acting on such states. Why such states? Because they carry the same charges. And we look at minimal energy states with given charges, J1, J2. So what do we need to, what we need to do? We need to diagonalize, find eigenvalues of the spin chain Hamiltonian, usual Heisenberg spin chain Hamiltonian. Find eigenvalues, find how energy depends on what? On essentially feeling fraction. What feeling fraction is how many spins up, down, what's the difference, what's the ratio of J2 to the length of the chain, which is J1 plus J2. So one can, so one loop term, which I was mentioning, gives us this D1 coefficient, and I'm assuming we take J to infinity. So this is a very long operator, but finding eigenvalue, we need to find eigenvalue, we need to consider very long chains. And that is complicated a priori. We need to, one way to go is to use Bethe-Ansatz, but in the large J limit, it actually simplifies. The problem simplifies, we can take thermodynamic limit of this Bethe-Ansatz, and the people, Beisert, Minahan, Staudachi, and Zaremba managed to compute this D1, choosing particular distribution, Bethe roots, et cetera. Result matches precisely that same C1 which we get from the string side. And that, moreover, it extends to the two-loop level. So doing the same for the D2, one gets this next term in the string expansion energy. So here are some... yes. Yeah. Yeah. Let me just add one comment on that. So more precisely, so why we, well, first, just to repeat why we're dealing with spin chain, because we think of one scalar up, one scalar, another scalar down, and we look at various orders of such operators. That's our eigenstates. Then various mixtures of such reorderings of these scalars. And that's how these operators look like. Dilatation operator, so one loop looks like this, two loop like looks like this, and the coefficients are right to have BPS operator when all spins are up, having zero energy, zero anomalous dimension. So this is an explicit form of free loop term, and to do, I'll not be describing how one does this through Beth answers, because I'll describe another way of finding these the same results in a more universal way, which is actually the aim of my talk. So one interesting remark, sort of quite surprising point, is that given this ferromagnetic Heisenberg chain, so we're talking about one loop dilatation operator, which is equivalent to Heisenberg spin chain. One may ask what kind of eigenstates one finds in this large J limit for long chains. And in fact, it was known in condensed matter literature that they use this word string, that there are quite light states with minimal energy, which are described by big clusters of spins. Because this is ferromagnetic chain, it's natural to have big chunks of spins, sort of moving slowly along the chain. And for example, there was a paper like this by Darren Shastri, which has macroscopic string states in Bethe solution of Heisenberg ferromagnetic spin chain in the title. Remarkably, these strings that they were talking about are really ADS5S5 strings. And in fact, the energy which they were describing fits into particular energy of a classical string.
So I have a question. When they call the microscopic string states, are these strings in the sense of beta roots on a string, or is this strings in the more string sense?
Yeah, these are strings in the sense that long strings, or strings of beta roots, or strings of like this. It's really what they had in mind is strings of Beth roots in some sense. That's true. In some sense, when we talk about strings, we really think of, well, actually, when I discuss coherent states, it will become clear what's the precise translation. What's the precise translation of that picture into a string
what do you
picture?
Say strings
are strings. What they have in the title, macroscopic string state, they mean it's a big chunks of spins up or spins down. But what they sometimes call strings are strings of Bethe roots. Just distribution of Bethe roots. Distribution of Bethe roots translates into particular string configuration. What I meant is...
You mean a large sense of string spins up, the sort of strings in the sense of BFN? The strings of the other direction are excitations of that string?
Yeah, in a sense, given particular string configuration, like, say, folder string, it described by certain distribution of angles, which are angles of S3. So these angles do something along sigma. So sigma is the length of a string of this chain. Now, these angles translate into classical expectation value of a spin. So if I describe this spin string state by classical field, by coherent state expectation value, unit vector which was in the previous talk, and I'll be using it also now, that will depend on angles. So these angles, so you can think of semi-classically, each of these spins is precessing in some way, looking mostly up, say. And then it slowly changes its direction. So that distribution is what may be called macroscopic string. And that translates into a string in ADS5, in S5. So how we... So to sort of motivate this relation to string theory, and in fact to sig model, which I would like to explain in more detail, one important point is that this spin chain which we're dealing with is ferromagnetic. So that means it's natural to have some big chunks of a string which of spins looking at one direction slowly changing from up to down. It's not like in antiferromagnetic case where they are basically randomly changing up and down. So the ground state, as I mentioned, is just BPS, and the generic Hamiltonian which we're dealing with at one and two loops is roughly speaking, it's it's interactions with long-range interactions like this, with some coefficients, plus higher-order terms. So this is ferromagnetic chain, and we expect it should be there should be some kind of effective low-energy description of what happens in such ferromagnetic chain. So we'd like to have some field theory, sort of analog of that, dynamics of that chain, and field theory description of states of that chain. Because what, again, what we're interested in is eigenstates of this Hamiltonian. That's eigen, that's equivalent to diagonalization of dilatation operator, which gives us anomalous dimension. So why effective, how we can get this effective field theory description? So one way to think of some kind of semi-classical picture, which is behind ferromagnetic spin chain, is just to write down, say, the operator equations for spins. So spins here is 1/2 Pauli matrices. Just operator equation for with this Hamiltonian translates into this equation. And then suppose you can take continuum limit here. That will give you classical Landau-Lifshitz equation for a unit vector n. So more precisely, what can, what one can do, one can start with spin-up state, which is the vector s being just 0, 0, third projection, which is equal to 1 times 1/2. And then rotate it in general direction n. And that will give us coherent state n instead of spin-up state. So coherent state, by definition, is the one which gives us expectation value of S being unit vector n, arbitrary unit vector n. So taking expectation value of this equation and then taking continuum limit gives Landau-Lifshitz equation for classical ferromagnet. So that is to say, semi-classical description of quantum mechanics of that spin chain, standard spin chain, is related to this Landau-Lifshitz equation. But why we can ignore higher order terms, high derivative terms? And the reason is that in large J limit, so it's important that we consider Long's chain, and in the limit when lambda tilde is fixed, and that's in another important element in this story. Indeed, higher order derivatives are suppressed, so it's natural to take continuum limit. So to summarize, taking J large and with fixed lambda tilde, it is natural to go from this quantum problem to semi-classical problem, which will involve only the second derivatives in the right-hand side of this equation. So generically, that's not true, that we can just, in condensed matter literature, there are lots of discussion of similar sort of semi-classical descriptions, but here it's very natural precisely because we fixed this lambda tilde. That's the limit which we're interested in. So more precisely, why, so what, how this relates to usual story. Given any spin chain Hamiltonian, we can rewrite part, we can write quantum mechanics of this spin chain in terms of a theory which was just discussed in the previous talk, was mentioned in the case of antiferromagnetic. We will have a Berry phase term, which is Vesuminer term, or nothing but usual magnetic monopole at the center of S2 times first derivative of n term, minus Hamiltonian, which is expectation value of Hamiltonian in this coherent state. So what one does is one starts with evolution operator for, with this usual quantum mechanics evolution operator for the spin chain. One rewrites it, the path integral in terms of integral by n. And then one can take continuum limit. So here I just took continuum limit already, replacing sum over sides by integral over sigma. So each n now is a function of time and sigma. So that's what one gets. And indeed, the Lagrangian, which follows from here for the Heisenberg chain, just gets back to us to this Landau-Lifshitz equation. So this is actually very well known. What I'm trying to stress is that taking continuum limit and restricting only to semi-classical approximation is because we are interested in the limit when j is large and lambda tilde is fixed. Large J means that quantum mechanics is roughly irrelevant. This J plays the role of 1 over Planck constant. So that's that argument is actually was suggested by Krushensky, and we sort of sharpened it in the paper with Krushensky and Rizhov. So his idea was to try to bypass use of Bethe ansatz, but rather try to understand how we can relate string theory and the spin chain story in a more direct way using this coherent state representation. So here I just summarize what I was just discussing. So starting with coherent state representation of path integral, and coherent state is just rotation of unit vector up into generic position, which is just done by applying rotation operators to spin up state. You go to path integral, and then you need to argue why you can replace this path integral just by classical approximation. And that turns out to be not always possible. In fact, this is possible at one loop level, but at higher orders, we'll need to include some quantum corrections as well. And that's the main subject of our paper. So starting with spin chain, you generate the action like this. So where is the place of such action on string side? So I stress this is non-relativistic action. In the ferromagnetic case, this Berry phase of Esimene term just gives you n dot times some function of n, plus spatial derivative expansion. So these terms come from two-loop dilatation operator, for example. So next to next nearest neighbor interaction. Plus there will be higher order terms. So that's the aim is thus to understand. So just let me pause for a second and try to say what we are trying to do. We are trying to establish this string. We'll try to understand why we got this agreement at one and two loop level between classical string solutions and solution of Bethe ansatz equations for this Heisenberg's Hamiltonian, which describes spin chain, this describes dilatation operator of Young-Mills, in a more systematic way, without avoiding Bethe ansatz and looking at particular solutions. Let's try to give more universal picture why that happened. So in a sense, we would like to derive the same effective field theory action, both from Young-Mills side, or dilatation operator, or spin chain side, and string side, and identify that. In the process...
Sorry, can I just make sure I'm understanding something? So you start with these fields phi, which are the Young-Mills theory. So they live on S3 cross R, four-dimensional.
Yes. Okay. Well, actually, they live on R4. We can map... So we're comparing operators on R4. Yes.
Okay.
So string states are essentially on R times S3.
Okay. But you're basically ignoring the S3 dependence of these. We're using some lowest mode of the operator.
S3 dependence.
Yeah. So you're including, in this two-dimensional sigma model that you're creating, or not quite a sigma model, this two-dimensional effective theory, the sigma direction is just the number of phis.
Okay? Yes.
So you add it. And then the sort of extra direction is the original time or radial direction on R4.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't quite understand your question. So what I'm doing, I'm looking at dimensions of these operators in R4, anomalous dimensions of this operator in R4.
Right.
Sigma direction is just direction along the how many fields I have.
Yeah.
Since I look at very long operators, I effectively can deal with continuous dimension.
Right. But you're writing down some effective two-dimensional theory.
Yes. Time is coming from quantum mechanics, essentially. Sigma is a continuous limit of this spin chain.
Okay. So I can't think of time as a remnant of one of the original four directions we had on R4.
Not on R4, I don't think so, because that will become actually, this is like dilatation direction.
So that's like the dilatation.
On R times S3, but yes, that will be time in ADS5. That's correct.
Yeah, but that's,
yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
S3,
that's correct.
Sorry.
Yeah, they are related that way. Yes. So. Important point will be kind of new expansion on string side. So to try to derive the same non-relativistic sigma model, which I was explaining, comes out of comes out of spin chain side, so ferromagnetic spin chain side, that kind of action. The same action we can actually extract from R times S3 sigma mole, where S3 now has nothing to do with S3 as a boundary of ADS5, it's S3 and S5. My strings are moving in S5. They essentially belong to S3 in that particular case. So we start with, let's say, ADS5 S5 sigma model, and I'll try to extract an effective action for some unit vector which will be present there. And that effective action will coincide with that effective action which comes from spin chain. So let me try to explain why that happens and how. So maybe just to add this n, in a sense, will be analog of transverse motions of a string in a BMM case, where you separate center of mass motion, you're left with small fluctuations. So that's an action, usual kind of plane wave action for transverse motions. That'll be an action for that analog of this vector n. So in a sense, these are like transverse coordinates with longitudinal coordinates gauged away. And that will be the action which we get in this limit when we take J very large. Large J limit is like non-relativistic limit in this case. That's why we get non-relativistic kind of sigma model. But how to do, how precisely, how to extract this in a precise way? So the idea is go back to parameterization where we have two complex coordinates. So we write S3 metric in terms of X1 and X2. And I would like to isolate a common phase which describes total spin in S3, or total R charge in a sense. So you have X1 and X2, which are equivalent to phi1, phi2 on the gauge theory side. So they correspond to the same rotations there. And large J limit means large J blunt plus J2. So total J is essentially this phase plus this phase. So what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to choose a parameterization of S3 in which this J large J limit is natural, is obvious how to take. So what I'm doing, I'll be using Hopf-type vibration parameterization. So I separate one phase alpha. U1 and U2 will be CP1 coordinates. So in terms of angles, this is just rewriting it, separating common phase and separating other angles of S3. But physically, what that means is we will be trying to gauge away or separate dynamics associated with total angular momentum, which will be orbital angular momentum, it's one angle, plus internal, which is rotation of a string around its center of mass. So that's the difference with BMM, that here we're dealing with two different kinds of momentum, and we need to isolate the coordinate which sort of corresponds to the total angular momentum. So mathematically, what is done is just writing S3 metric in this way. So C here is this cosine, is just one form, which is monopole potential in S2. Now, we can introduce a unit vector n, and we write this S3 metric also in this way, which is also well-known form. So that'll be effectively Caveirian derivative d alpha, which is this d alpha plus this monopole potential. And unit vector n is related to this shape u of x1, which these radial directions, in this way, which is kind of reminiscent of this coherent state expectation value. So u, in fact, parameterizes kind of state of a string, of a spin chain, in a sense. And this unit vector n will be related to that unit vector which parameterizes coherent state. So this is just string side, and this is nothing more than parameterization of S3. So what we do next, we will try to declare that this alpha is like longitudinal coordinate, time is like tau. We need to choose a gauge away alpha and time. Our total sigma model is minus dt squared ADS time. And from S5, we take this d omega 3 metric. three-sphere. So I just look at S3 within S5. So that's the S3 metric. So the idea is that these ends should be physical transverse coordinates, which we should see on the Young-Mills side. Well, we can't see T and alpha. So which we should solve constraints, eliminate them, plug into the action, and see what you get, or plug into the equation of motion. And to cut this short, the end result of this elimination, which is actually kind of non-trivial, it's better not to use conformal gauge to do this two orders, and I'll skip that story. So one needs to be careful about what kind of charges one identifies on both sides. So we have energy, we have spin, and we have also SO3 charges, which just correspond to this sigma model which we have here. And thinking which charges are fixed on spin chain side and which are fixed on sigma model side, one realizes that better one does not use conformal gauge. Why? Because here J, which is our total spin, is distributed inhomogeneously. Like we have this d0 alpha with time derivative of this covariant derivative, integrated with sigma. Now on spin chain side, we have our spins distributed homogeneously along J. So what that means, it suggests that we should choose a gauge where essentially the same happens with J as well. And that's not the case of a conformal gauge, but I'll not go into that. But the end result is that the sigmoidal action in a proper gauge where this J distributes homogeneously boils down to that action written in terms of this redefined lambda. So this is not equivalent action. It's actually like an action where we are already preparing ourselves to take this J to infinity limit with lambda tilde fixed. So what that means, it's better to explain in analogy with, say, friction, where we have second derivative equation with the first order term when we just did some redefinition of field by exponent I, omega tau, say. And this coefficient is small. So we basically re-expand this equation near this term. So that obviously throws away growing solutions but keep decaying solutions. So something similar happens here. But that's an exact result before re-expanding lambda tilde. So it obviously reminds us some static gauge Nambu action, but there is a first term, which is this linear term in time derivative. So it's not relativistic action. It doesn't look like a relativistic action. It has this n dot here. So leading odd equations coming from this action is just Landau-Lipschitz equations. It's because, as you see here, leading term will be just n prime squared. This is n dot squared, n prime squared. These are subleading terms.
But
there is n dot here. And the final step is what we need to do is to do field redefinition. So that's another important step. So since you have n dot, but your first term is n dot. So equations here are like first order equation in time. So whatever high derivatives of time appear on the right-hand side, you can always re-express them order by order in lambda in terms of spatial derivatives only. So that, in fact, is a remarkable feature of these first-order differential equations in time. So end result is, to say it more precise, so what we do local field redefinition. It's not the same end I started with. I do field redefinition. I end up with this action. Remarkable thing about this action, these coefficients are not random. I can't change them anymore. I claim they are uniquely fixed by R times S3 sigma. So you give me this sigma, I give you these coefficients uniquely, in unique way. I can't change anything else.
But because you've done everything you can do, right?
Yes, I gauge fixed. I did field redefinition, which eliminates high derivatives. There is no freedom left. So remarkably, these coefficients are exactly the ones which we get on spin chain side. So what was checked?
The ones underlined in red.
Yes, the ones underlined red were checked already. These are hard to check because we need to do some highly non-trivial computation spin chain. So the beta ansatz essentially, so this covers comparison regardless particular choice of solution, circular, folded, actions match, that means integral structures match, charges match, energies match, and we can translate whatever string solution we find here, and that will be essentially solution of leading order Landau-Lifshitz equations. It does do give us these folded string solutions. They essentially summarize first term in the expansion of the energy, what I was calling lambda tilde over j squared, well, just lambda tilde c1 of j1 over j2. So this term is essentially described by Landau-Lifshitz equation. Well, just these two terms, but next order, it will give you next order term, etc. So this is just an action, effect, kind of effective action which summarizes this expansion, regardless particular solution.
So that elliptic function you were getting just comes from a simple action?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just write down this action. Essentially, these Landau-Lifshitz equations for n. They just become Sine-Gordon type equations, but, well, not Sine-Gordon. Now they actually first order. Well, this time dependence is trivialized for the particular ansatz which you have. Time dependence is simple for these rigid shape solutions. It's omega tau for some angle. The spatial dependence, which gives you, this is the one which gives you the elliptic. Well, in fact,
Before you go, so this field redefinition is done order by order perturbation.
Order by order by lambda. It would be very interesting to know kind of explicit way to resum this series. And I know this to quadratic order. So, and that's not exactly BMN, but very, very, very closely related. So you may ask, what are these terms which are quadratic in N? So clearly, there are more and more derivatives which is correlated, which are correlated with the lambda, power of lambda. And they can indeed be resummed into square root. It would be interesting to know what is the formula for n four terms. And it should be just well-defined formula which starts from this term and goes up.
But if you just took that and interpreted that as a spin chain.
Yeah, well, you're coming close to what I'm going to discuss at the end. So there is an ansatz for spin chain which does give this. And that's not exactly BMN because, well, this is more like a coherent state of BMN with a small number of impurities. So what do we get on spin chain set? Again, to close this, the loop of my discussion. So taking that same limit, what we need to do, according to the general ansatz, what we general picture of how to get from spin chain to this coherent state path integral, we need to take expectation value of dilatation operator. And the Heisenberg term just give us n prime squared. Now, two loop term give us, if you just write what is the coherent state expectation value, it will be these differences of these unit vectors at different sites. Remarkable thing is that these terms have just the right coefficients to cancel the first derivative term. So second coherent state expectation value of two-loop dilatation operator does not change this term. It just generates second derivative term. Higher orders are suppressed by 1 over j. So why 1 over j? Because we take continuum limit. There will be high derivatives, but you... Yeah, one over j, well, important point that there is also lambda squared term in front of this. So you need to extract term, which I didn't write it in more in a precise way. So there is lambda squared term. So here will be lambda tilde. There are two powers of j squared, lambda tilde squared. There are four derivatives. Each derivative gives you 1 over j. This 1 over j combined with lambda give you lambda tilde squared. So that's the term which survives in that limit. But important point that there are no low derivative term, because if it were there, this limit will be singular. It's kind of related also to regularity of BMN limit, but for these quadratic terms, that's exactly what is going on. But higher derivative terms are suppressed, so that's why we can just keep these terms. So here it's the same story. Now, so these coefficients which we get here from 1, 2, and 3 loops are exactly the ones which match string theory expression. But one term which was the main point of our paper to see how we match also this term, it does appear on string side. It does not naively appear on spin chain side. But it does appear if we include quantum correction. So it's important, in fact, important story is how to extract this term from spin chain side. And the answer is that you cannot just take classical action. In spite of the fact that we have J in front of the whole action, and we send J to infinity, so that suggests just classical limits. This action actually generates divergences, and which are cut off essentially by 1 over J, J itself. So you can get, if you first take continuum limits, compute quantum corrections, you can get still corrections, singular corrections in this in this large J limit. So this term comes out of computing these quantum corrections carefully, and we don't know how to do this in continuum. We actually started back in discrete version. And on the spin chain side, you extract this quantum correction, then take continuum limits. And that's how we get precisely this -3/4, which is the term which appeared in this action which I got on string side. There is a different argument which... So this confirms agreement at two-loop order, which was observed from beta ansatz, and there was also an independent argument which was comparing beta ansatz, general solution of beta ansatz, to general solution of sigma model, expanded in a similar way. There was a parallel work by Minahan, Zaremba, Kazakov, and Marshikov. So the challenge is to do the, well, there are one challenge is to how to explain how we can get this term and similar terms here by in continuum. It seems possible. And no, these spin chain side looks like we need to include only one loop diagrams. So the most singular diagrams, which spoil this naive semi-classical limit, are just what looks like just one loop diagram. We don't know how to do this in continuum. Well, this term is one loop. This term is one loop. Very few papers in condensed method literature which were doing similar sort of computations. And one was by Reed and Sakdev. And unfortunately, they were never interested in these higher derivative terms. And they also did not quite succeed to do similar computations in continuum. So they used some lattice regularization randomization group, and it's still not very useful in this context.
Which is the term that corresponds to that force spin direction? That's the one?
They're all here.
They're all there.
Yeah, they're all hidden here. I'll comment on what is known about three loops. So the three loops, there is a major problem there. So one conclusion is that we sort of see some beginning of understanding more precise workings of this idea CFT, at least in that particular semi-classical limit of very long operators. So advantage of what is going on here is that we have some kind of translation from one picture to another. So for example, we may ask how this eigenstate, how particular operator looks like, given a particular classical solution, how can write down the operator? And this coherent state picture seems to suggest what you should do. You should basically translate the form of this unit vector n from string side into Young-Mills side, and that will tell you distribution of these operators along the chain.
N is sort of in the string side measuring the transverse
fluctuations
around this classical solution.
Yes. On gauge theory side, you have your spins. Yeah, it measures, roughly speaking, classical, what's the most probable direction of spin at each side, how it changes along the side, along the chain. So how n changes along this, so string is like circle, so n is changing how when you go along sigma. So same is happening with this opening. So, well, before I get to problem, let me mention that there is an extension of that story to three-spin sector at one loop level. This is, again, having three complex combination of scalars is a closed sector. And also to the case where you have one spin in ADS and one spin in S5. This is interesting case because this is coming close to be related to SL2 case, which was people who are doing QCD were discussing this SL2 spin chain. Now, what about three-loop comparison? At the moment, there are two negative statements. Naively, given this three-loop dilatation operator, we may ask how we can go and find eigenstates in this case. It's not known what kind of beta ansatz you should use, just directly looking at this three-loop dilatation operator. But there is
The three-loop dilatation operator is known to be integral?
The three-loop dilatation operator was not derived from first principles. There is an indirect argument, which is very, very convincing, by Beiser, which uses super conformal algebra, Feynman diagram structure plus BMN limit. It gives you unique D6, which I have shown before.
Yes. But it was integral.
It happens to be integral, yes. One loop, two loop, three loop, all happen to be integral. Now, if you start with this operator and try to diagonalize it numerically and find lowest energy eigenstate, you discover it doesn't match what you expect from string side. Furthermore, Slaudacher and Serban, they managed to make a clever observation that this one loop, two loop, three loop operators can be embedded into what's called in a Zemtsev spin chain. There is a spin chain long range order, I actually have a transparency on that, which is known to be integrable, or conjecture, well, it's known to be integrable, and it contains only the Hamiltonian contains only quadratic and spin interactions, but there are higher charges, so there are other Hamiltonian which contains also quartic charges and higher. They observed that one and two and three loop dilatation operators actually can be embedded into this Inner-Zemtsev chain. And then for Inner-Zemtsev chain, you have beta ansatz and you can apply beta ansatz compute three loop correction coming from three loop dilatation operators. But this Inner-Zemtsev chain disagrees with BMN limits, starting with four-loop order. So next order is wrong. At least if we believe in BMN, I think that's what we should say. It has nothing to do. This is an Inner-Zemtsev chain is purely technical tool. It's a technical tool. Yes. Yes. So what may happen is that the right spin chain is integrable, but you need it's not an Inner-Zemtsev chain; it's a different chain. So just a couple of quick comments in related to what I was just saying. One
second. If you take that one, then that does agree with something.
No. The three-loop dilatation operator, as it's believed to be at the moment, happens to predict that next order lambda cube order in this formula disagrees with string theory. So that's a puzzle. It disagrees with string theory in two completely orthogonal directions. One direction is one over J corrections to BMN. There was a paper by Carlin, Schwartz, and others, and they computed one over J correction to particular to impurity operator. And it results happens to disagree with this three-loop dilatation operator, which suggested by Beisert and Stavdachin. And it also disagrees with these multi-spin solutions. And that may be suggesting we don't understand something in comparison, or there is still some strange loophole, because this dilatation operator is not derived from rigorously, step by step, from Young-Mills theory. But
so it's not derived from actually doing Feynman diagrams.
Not from doing Feynman diagrams step by step, as was the two or the two-loop one. But still, it's a very convincing argument. And moreover, there is a recent check of this three-loop dilatation operator, which is related to that paper by Kodik, Lipatov, Velizhanin et al. The check is as follows. You can start with, you can look at the Kanishi operator, and it has a descendant, which is commutator of phi 1, phi 2 squared, which sits in this SU2 sector. So you can apply this three-loop dilatation operator to compute anomalous dimension of this Kanishi operator, or descendant of Kanishi. But there is another descendant of Kanishi, which sits in this SL2 sector, which was discussed by Kotikov et al. And they didn't know that, but in their paper, there is a prediction for, there is a result, there is a computation, there is a result for the three-loop anomalous dimension when this another descendant of Kanishi. And they happen to be, to match precisely with prediction for another descendant from this Beisert and Stavdachin. So it looks like that seems to be a very successful check of what they suggest. So there is a problem, and I suspect that it may be a problem in translation, how we translate, how we identify the two sides. There is no freedom in redefining coupling. And why? Because we insist this BMN limit is, it fixes the scheme, essentially. So maybe there is some subtlety in how we do take the orders of limits or something like that. What is really puzzling, why that didn't show up at two-loop level, why it shows up at three-loop level, which is kind of strange. But it would be interesting to push the program which we were, which I was describing using this coherent state approach to see, yeah, to three-loop order. In a sense, the hope is that doing that...
You have one side.
Well, let me just say we have one side, but this one side should tell us which is spin chain would give me this result. And I know this result is absolutely true on string side. So these coefficients are just the right ones which reproduce me all known solutions, all their energies at three-loop order. So this comes out of certain spin chain. I can make a guess what should be coefficients in my three-loop spin chain, and that will tell us which spin chain which will match string theory. Then we can check, for example, agreement also with this Kalin et al. Computation, 1 over J. In fact, strangely enough, Beisert managed to find such three-loop dilatation operator, which agrees with string theory and Kalin et al. But it's not integrable. That's really puzzling. So there is a formal guess, well, formal expression, which just with somewhat different coefficients for the quartic spin chain, quartic spin interactions, which matches with accuracy of 1% to multi-spin string energy. Yes, numerically. Numerically, because we don't know what to do with it without Beth answers, without integrability. But if we knew how to do this coherent state expectation value computation, we don't need Beth answers. We could do this for the dilatation operator, and that's part of what we would like to do. So maybe integrability is realized in some funnier way, or I don't know. It's really puzzling. So two very quick remarks. So one is about other sectors. So the operators which one can look at is SL2 sector, which, roughly speaking, one combination of covariant derivatives in one scalar. So most general cases, five spin type. So in that case, again, there is a regular expansion in at large spin. And roughly speaking, the story is the same, but you replace SU2 by SL2 on string side. So you get action like this, where L is a vector which defines hyperboloid with signature minus plus plus instead of two-dimensional sphere. Now, on spin chain side, it's actually less trivial. It's what is called XXX minus 1/2 spin chain. It coherent state expectation value here, it looks like logarithm of 1 minus, etc. It's classically integrable theory, but it's not only quantum integrable, but also classically integrable. But in the right limit, it just gives us back the same action. So it's again agreement. And the reason why there should be agreement here was it was known before, again, from Bethe-Ansatz computation on string side, on Gagnon side, and comparing to classical solutions on string side, agreement was observed before. So at one loop level and two loop level, in all the semi-classical sectors with many spins, there should be perfect agreement between n equals 4 Young millisecond and string theory. Now, what about extensions? So extensions, there are two different extensions, beyond large spin limit or beyond large n. So there are various confusions about this. So let me just mention quickly that in principle, full spin chain results should give us, without taking j to infinity, should give us full quantum string sigma, continuous sigma. So discrete spin chain, in a sense, is still continuum string sigma. So alpha prime correction just should translate in 1 over j correction. Now, if we go beyond planar limit, there we should get to some string beat model, and that should be some kind of matrix model, some discrete world sheet model. But that's much harder story. Well, for BMN already, there are various complications with that. Now, what about exact dilatation operator? That's what I was mentioning. That's a work which we're trying to do now with Anton Grigov. So I mentioned this expression for Kanishi operator. That's exact expression, 1, 2, 3 loop orders, which now seems to be confirmed, well, pretty much known what is this coefficient. So what about large lambda limit of this dimension? What we should expect? So in principle, our aim is to try to understand how dimensions, what are exact dimensions of various operators, in particular, whether they are regular in lambda, etc. So Kanishi is a simple testing ground, well, complicated testing ground, but at least we know something on Young-Mills side. So whether this formula goes to something like lambda 1 over 4 at large lambda or something else. So here we do expect that should be lambda in power 1 over 4. On the basis of that should be some string mode, and string mode should scale as square root of alpha prime, and that's effective right power of string tension. But what about long operators? So if you have long operators, maybe you should expect that dimension should scale as square root of lambda, just as I was describing before. So how to see whether this is right or wrong? We'll try to guess what is the exact form of dilatation operator. So we can organize the dilatation operator in terms of matrices, well, in terms of Qs, which are 1 minus sigma A sigma A plus C. And you may sum over C from, say, 1 to L minus 1. So that uses periodicity. So there will be some coefficients here. And that should be generic ansatz, which is confirmed, which is, we know it's true to 1, 2, 3, even 4 loop order, you can fix what's the structure of this term. Plus, there are higher order terms. In fact, these multi-spin interactions, again, they are built out of these Qs. So this is 3 loop operator has this structure. Plus, there may be higher powers of Qs, etc. So let's try to fix that term. And in fact, what we're trying to do, imposing regularity of essentially BMN-type limit, we can find these coefficients, which appear here, exactly, to all orders. And in particular simple cases, when L goes to infinity, we can resum this series, and we get this, how these coefficients look like. So again, this is a sum over this next neighbor interactions. And there is a function of lambda which appears here. What kind of function of lambda? Surprisingly, something which looks long, but if you see the series which we got, which we started with, it's actually surprising that we can sum it. So this is hypergeometric function, which basically goes like, the coefficient goes like this. Remember I mentioned the square root of lambda, and it does, at large lambda goes as square root of lambda, not fourth power, but square root. We may say why, because that's assumes large L limit, long spin chain or semi-class long operators. So that suggests that may be generic behavior for long operators. Their dimension should go as square root of lambda. Now this function is actually very funny. It does have two regular expansions at both limits. It has a so the argument here is minus lambda over pi squared. Now it has the function has a cut at positive z, so z is minus lambda squared. So we're sitting somewhere here. So it has a cut starting from 1 to infinity. So it's actually, again, I stress, it has two regular expansions. So one expansion just matches what we know from perturbation theory, and that predicts what we get at large lambda. So looking at particular solutions for which we, well, for BMN, we can sort of probably see agreement precise way, but it does, as I mentioned earlier, that formula, it does reproduce that formula. If we just look at linear in Q terms, take a Heron state expectation value, you will get this formula. Now, what we're really interested in, what happens at finite L. So here we should get this fourth root of lambda, and we, at the moment we don't know what are these coefficients at finite L. But it's interesting to compare this to what is known in condensed matter literature. So this Haldane Shastri model, which is a limit of Inazemtsev model, which interpolates between Heisenberg and this Haldane Shastri, it looks like the Hamiltonian of that chain looks like this. Again, it's linear in this matrix Q, which is minus 1 minus sigma A plus C. And these coefficients are written here. And they have two different limits, where they become 1 over sine or sine hyperbolic. And what Serban and Staudacher did, they observed that this parameter Q, which appears here, can be related to lambda. And if it's related to lambda, we get matching of three-loop term. Now, but that disagrees with BMN, so that's not the ansatz which I mentioned before and which gave this function. So the interesting question whether higher order terms in Q can in fact be determined by this single Q term, two-spin interaction. So that's one possible conjecture. Looks like if we really follow that logic, insisting on this regularity of this BMN type limit, Inazemtsev chain is ruled out, so we should look for some other chain. And the main issue is whether it'll be integrable and whether in that case these terms can be sort of related to these terms in some way. So if that's the case, we may be able at one day to compute exact dimension of Kanishi operator and then check whether indeed it scales as fourth root of lambda. But at the moment it's unclear. Thank you.